It's time for Mac Break Weekly. Renee Ritchie's here. Andy Iannacco's here. We're going to, of course, talk about Apple's big announcements last week at WWDC. What could go wrong? Are we in a post-PC world? Why do we need Apple Silicon? And why should we call it Apple Silicon? Plus a look at the new AR Kit 4. It's mind-blowing. It's all coming up next on Mac Break Weekly. Mac Break Weekly comes to you from Twit's LastPass Studios. Stay in control when it comes to your company's access points and authentication. LastPass makes enterprise-level security simple for your remote workforce. Check out LastPass.com/Twit to learn more.
Podcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
This is Mac Break Weekly, episode 720, recorded Tuesday, June 30th, 2020. Microsoft's Riding Mower. This episode of Mac Break Weekly is brought to you by Casper. Casper is a sleep brand that makes expertly designed products to help you get your best rest one night at a time. Get $100 towards select mattresses by visiting casper.com/MacBreak and using the promo code MacBreak at checkout. It's time for Mac Break Weekly, the show where we cover the latest news from Apple, and it's going to be a really slow couple of months. Fortunately, there's still a lot to talk about. Renee Ritchie's here from iMore. Great to have you back. Missed
you. You say that, Leo, but I haven't slept in like
Yeah, you're exhausted,
days.
Aren't you? I bet you are. I bet you are,
it's
really.
It's the best kind, though. It's Christmas in June, and it just is so much. It's like all the presents are open, and I get to put the Lego together now.
Yeah. Yeah, no kidding. Andy Iannacco also here. Good to see you, Andy.
Hello.
We thought we had Alex. He bailed at the last minute. That's okay, because you two get to make it Comic Book Central.
Are we allowed to guess whether Alex is at an undisclosed location, maybe right where Johnny Tsurugi was last week?
It's a little suspicious that he's not here now, but okay. Okay. Which one of you wasn't here last week? I forgot.
I see Renee. I was here.
Oh, must have been Alex wasn't here. So, okay, good. All right. Because I know Lori was. And we got Lori's take on all of this on Sunday. She was on Twitter, which was great.
Yeah, that was a great show.
Yeah. Well, you liked it because it was all Apple. I heard from a few people.
I would have liked it regardless because I like those people.
Yeah. And I did hear from Dan Patterson who said, thank God I didn't want to hear any COVID news, and I didn't hear any COVID news. It was really all about the candy store.
Yep,
or the fruit company, depending on your point of view.
If it was Google I.O. week, it would have been the same thing with Android. Oh, yeah. I mean, just it happens a couple times a year.
That's exactly what Jason Snell said. Twice a year, it's all Apple all the time. And there's actually, you know, I didn't want to kind of steal the thunder from this show either, but golly, there's a lot to talk about. I decided today to play devil's advocate. Because I keep trying. I tried last week with you guys. I tried Sunday to say, okay, but what's the negative on this transition to Apple Silicon? And
oh, can I play the devil then? If you're doing the advocate?
I'll be the advocate. You be the devil on my left shoulder. The devil. No, that's Andy. On the right shoulder. So
I have negatives for you.
As excited as I am about Apple Silicon, I do wonder if haven't we been in a post-PC era for a while now? And is it really, does it really matter? I think ultimately I wonder, does it really matter what chip you're on, what operating system you're on? Because I see a world increasingly that operates off data and programs in the cloud on clients that can range from a Game Boy to a desktop thin client. And, you know, for instance, and I've been saying this about Windows for a long time, the next time a business buys a computer, they probably shouldn't buy a Windows 10 computer. They should just buy something that can connect to Windows 10 in the cloud and run their apps up there. And there's huge benefits to that. Maintenance, operations, you know, security, on and on and on. The only negative, the only downside is local data. If you're living in the cloud and the cloud goes away, then you kind of have some problems.
You just explained why Satya Nadella is CEO of Microsoft now and not Steve Ballmer anymore.
Yeah, well, exactly. And you know, we talked a lot on Wednesday on Windows Weekly about Apple's announcement because, and completely coincidentally, Microsoft closed all of its stores forever.
last week. Mixer.
And Mixer. And I think it's a Microsoft that is increasingly focused on exactly the scenario I just talked about. Windows is nice. Yeah. Office is nice.
It's Scott McNeely's, you know, it's always been, it's always coming, but never quite arriving. You know, and Scott McNeely would talk about the thin cloud, and Larry Ellison would talk about the thin cloud, and the early founders of Google. And we're slowly getting to the point where the actual cloud works enough to make it a non-horrible experience locally.
Yeah. And also with Microsoft, you see them. There was that 8-year period in which they decided they didn't know what they wanted to be, or they didn't want to admit that they actually like wearing ties. You know, it happens to like so many people, like so many men and women, where it's like, wow, I'm going to buy this rock and roll T-shirt, like which I don't wear anymore because I feel like I just don't want to wear them anymore. So you saw Microsoft feel as though, oh, I'm going to develop a smartwatch, and I'm going to develop like a consumer. I'm going to have a special version of Windows that works on an iPad sort of thing. And it took them a while to realize that there are reasons why they have the market share that they have, and it's because they don't know how to be Apple. They really know how to be Microsoft.
Yeah.
So the Microsoft Store was always a very, very odd sort of choice for them to make, because it was such a brilliant choice for Apple, because they are a place where if you're in a mall, you will buy the sort of stuff that people in malls like to buy, in addition to being a service center. But for Microsoft, it was like, we really want one of those too. Please, can we have a riding mower? I know that the neighbor has a big lawn and we have a small one, but I really want a riding mower.
It's really true.
We have
it's
lawn
Microsoft's
darts
riding other mower. Mowers. That's really true.
The thing where I think it's differentiated though is that if you are somebody, and I totally believe you, I have the same vision of a mobile endpoint. We're all going to have little marbles or mother boxes in our pockets that authenticate us, you know, through biometrics, connect to the cloud and recreate our computing environment in AR or opportunistically with whatever hunk of glass we happen to be near, with any sort of input method that's available. But I think there is going to be at least, you know, short term, decade long divide where some people don't care at all where all of the operations on that data are completed. You know, they're just as happy for Google or Microsoft to do it on the cloud as they are for it to happen anywhere. And there'll be some percentage of people that want that still want control over that data and want the more private data acted on locally, and having cutting edge silicon in iPhones and iPads and Apple, whatever, you know, the next generation of products is, will be a competitive advantage for them because they'll be able to do something.
I actually was thinking about that last night. I thought you could build, I kind of had this notion of, it was a sci-fi story almost. Shouldn't everybody, every home, every person have a secure enclave that stores everything they do? And that is somehow online, doesn't matter where it's hosted, but somehow, you know, could be in your closet, but it's somehow online and accessible with all of these edge devices that we are eventually going to be using, because that's clearly what's happening. You just described it with a watch and glasses and IoT devices. We want to be able to access our data everywhere, but we want a secure private enclave. And it even goes along with this vision that Tim Berners-Lee and others have expressed, Bruce Schneier too, that maybe we should have control of our data and then sell it or lease it or allow somebody to see it.
Yeah.
Well, the only way you do that is in your own secure enclave. But that doesn't seem like much of a role. Here's my problem. Apple just announced the newest, shiniest thing I've ever seen. I love it. It's the equivalent of Princess Amidala's Starship. You know, with Apple Silicon.
Created by Alex Lindsay.
Yeah, it's beautiful. I want it. But they made this thing in an era when, you know, we don't really need starships anymore because we got teleportation, you know?
Mm. Not quite, though. Adam's just still being spread about the galaxy.
But I think that, I think you hit it on the head earlier that it used to be that we would think of computing in terms of mobile and mobile and desktop, or mobile and not mobile, let's say. So meaning that things that are designed to be carried in your pocket, worn on your wrist, or a tablet that's so easy to carry around, you'd carry it even if you don't need it, versus something that runs a desktop operating system, be it a really, really slim notebook or a really, really powerful desktop. Now, however, in 2020 and 20 going forward, there's the third category, which is I don't care. You know, where and those are the people for, and that's why I think that Apple put so much not only so much development, but so much focus on in their announcements last week on Safari, because basically apps that run within a browser are the king of I don't care computing, because it does like the your basic biscuits and gravy computing, where I need to get my email, I need to do messaging, I need to get access to some sort of powerful but not necessarily a hammer of God's powerful office suite. All that sort of stuff is done really, really, really well by anything that can run in a very good web browser. This is why so many old computers have a great lease on life, because used to be you'd say, oh, well, I'll install Linux on it, which doesn't put quite so many demands on it. Now you might put Linux on it just to say all it has to do is run Firefox or run a Chromium-based browser, and it's suddenly a perfectly usable laptop again. So I think that that's something that Apple is very, very wise to keep focused on, because as soon as they seed that the I don't care computing category to, well, they're just going to use Chrome and that's about it, that's when they lose the attention of their users. That's when they lose the ability to sort of project Apple specific enhancements to their users as well.
Well, and of course, Apple Silicon will have amazing battery life and has a great low power curve, as all ARM architectures do. So maybe that is, I feel like Apple's designing a Ferrari and we're all getting bicycles. It's
just not good. Like it's like with Stadia, or you look at all these technologies and it's like, yes, for like, it's like 80% of the time it's 80% good enough. And I think it's going to take 5 years to maybe iron all that out. And in the meantime, Apple will have their own silicon. They'll be designing exactly for what they want. And they're going to make sure, like when you look at, I forget who posted it, it might've been DHH, but they were posting the benchmarks for browsers. And thanks to the stuff that Apple builds into the chips to do JavaScript acceleration, it just radically outperforms what you're getting in other browsers.
So you'll want an Apple,
and that's a hybrid best of both worlds.
You'll want an Apple thin client.
Yes, that's it. I want my thin client to be Apple Silicon.
Well, and there is a market there, and I guess, you know, it's kind of the same market. It's just a little bit of a different form factor as the laptop market. So, yeah. And in a way, really, your phone and your iPad are thin clients in a lot of the uses. Yeah. So, yeah. I wanted to bring up the one negative. I really saw this move to Apple Silicon as transformational for technology in the computer industry. Actually, not for technology, for the computer industry. And then it hit me. Maybe there is no computer industry, really.
You want battery life on your on your thin client. Like, there's all sorts of really compelling features that once you control the silicon, you can, like, they have their own H.265 encode decode, and that means that when you watch Netflix or Apple TV, it just lasts longer and is better processed than it is. And all of those things.
I still want a computer with Apple Silicon. I want a 2 terabyte hard drive. I want 100 teraflops.
We still don't have answers. We don't know, like, can you install Linux on this? Like, we've heard that you can install no longer signed versions of macOS. And that means, like, if you put it in reduced security mode, you can go in and do that.
Wait a minute. Unpack that one, because that's interesting.
Okay.
So we saw Linux running in emulation. Saying that the new Apple hardware will not require a signed operating system?
So there's two modes. When you get it, you'll be able to choose between two modes. The first mode, the default mode, the mode I'm going to call, like, for mainstream users, runs exactly like an iPhone and an iPad, and it can run iPhone and iPad apps, and it's just total security. It's exactly like the iPhone security model. You can, though, go in and change that setting to reduce security, and that disables system integrity protection and a bunch of other stuff. I don't think it's officially called hobbyist mode.
It's analogous to what Microsoft does with Secure Boot on Windows and what Google does with Secure Boot on a Chromebook, right?
Yeah, it's similar to that. The only difference with the iPhone
On PCs and Chromebooks, you can turn it off. It's a little tricky on a Chromebook, but on PCs, you can turn it off in BIOS on many PCs.
Yeah.
You could never do that on Apple, right? You couldn't install your own arbitrary operating system on Apple hardware.
You could, and then it got complicated with the T2, and then you had to boot in to get rid of SIP, and it was a whole complicated thing. But it was a hobbyist thing. And now you'll be able to do the same thing. It looks even more easily.
I'll be able, theoretically, to do a dual-boot Mac Linux machine.
Well, so we don't know. They did say that you'll be able to run versions of macOS that Apple's no longer signed, but they haven't mentioned anything about any other operating
system. That's the opposite direction they're going with the iPhone, isn't it?
But didn't they specifically mention virtualization of Linux installs?
They showed that, yes.
Virtualization, but not
that's in
like
virtualization.
Native.
Yeah, that's the okay. hypervisor.
And maybe it works. I just don't know. It's just what we haven't heard anything yet. So like those are the things.
It's interesting they would bring that up, though.
Stressing on.
Well,
it was in this talk. There's a whole session on Apple Silicon and how the secure boot works and the two different security modes. And they also have this really cool new restore process where you no longer have to hold down those keys or try to remember what those keys are. Now, if you hold down the power key, Touch ID key, it'll give you a menu.
Oh, hallelujah.
And you can choose which boot option. Yeah. But also, it has a hit. And this is something I'm wondering about for the inevitably portless iPhone too, or portless whoever makes a phone. It's got a hidden recovery partition. So even if you annihilate the drive, you annihilate the normal recovery partition, it's got a completely sealed, secure, little tiny instance that it can use to recover the entire machine if it needs to.
That's cool.
Which I thought was super clever.
So you've watched all – have you now watched all the sessions? Most of them.
I'm doing them in order of priority. I made a whole list of prioritization, and I'm just going. So I've done all the Apple Silicon ones. I've done a lot of the iOS interface ones. I've done a lot of the iPadOS ones. I'm starting on the watch ones.
There's so much to unpack.
There's 200 sessions.
Yeah, there's so much goodness. And I asked this last on Twit with Jason Snell and Dan Morin and Lori Gill. Isn't this a better WWDC doing it this way? It's so much more inclusive. Anybody can participate.
Yeah, I think so. It's particularly because I think that it also gives Apple more. It's less of a distraction for Apple now because they don't have to get the entire dog and pony show running for the circus tent up and running for an entire week of their schedule. It's more like, well, this person, this team is completely ready with their content, so let's just have them do all of their sessions right now, 3 weeks in advance. They're in the can, and now they're free to do what they're actually being paid to do. Actually, making sure that these features that they just talked about actually work by September. And it's always been a big thorn in people's side to get these big circus tent sort of things running. The effect on productivity, the effect on schedules, it's considerable. And the fact that they keep doing them shows you how important it is that they have these regular events.
I have to say, now that when you're talking about this boot, this really is a perfect example of why leaving Intel is a good thing. Because you really were defined somewhat by the requirements of the x86 chips as to your boot process. Now,
and to work around it. I mean, they made and stuck in and charged us for a whole T2 chip just to provide some level of security around the boot process. Yeah. And now they can do literally anything they want.
Which could be good or bad. We've had time now to absorb this. We did Mac Break Weekly pretty much the next day last week. So, but as I absorb this, I want to reiterate, I feel like this was very good news for people who love Mac.
Yeah, I think it's part of my job to point out things like, oh, do we really want a desktop operating system that locks you out of a lot of the things that make the desktop experience so valuable? That's my job, and I do sincerely feel those things. However, I'm capable of feeling multiple things at the same time.
Well, what are we losing?
I'm sorry, just to complete my point. But it's also one of the advantages of having, depending on whose stats you believe, less than 20% or less than 10% of the market share is that you are completely Microsoft has desktop computing covered. Anybody who needs traditional desktop computing, it's covered. They have that option available. So you should now feel free as a manufacturer to say, let's go a little bit nuts. Let's push the envelope a little bit more so that people who are using Macs for a specific reason because they've looked at the ecosystem of Windows and decided that's not for me can get some absolutely unique advantages that come from a company that's not only just developing every scrap of code that's on this thing, but every scrap hardware that's inside this thing. So I hope that Apple goes, I wouldn't say a little bit nuts, but I would be disappointed if they did this switch to a whole new architecture and they didn't take advantage of all of the freedom that they have now as engineers to develop a computer that's exactly the way that they think a computer should run.
Yeah. What are we giving up? control
Windows and boot camp.
Boot camp, and maybe not boot camp.
Well, no. So I don't know if you saw, but they, John Gruber had Craig Federighi and watch that, Jaws.
Yeah.
And they talked specifically about what he said was like hobbyist features, but that boot camp was not surviving the transition, and the future for that kind of stuff is going to be virtualization.
Yeah. And they said it'll be just as good. You won't need it. But of course, people who like to run on bare metal say.
So, yeah. So if Windows are like, and some developers love the Mac because they could run Unix and Linux and OS and Mac OS and Windows all on one machine. So any, for a lot of people, Windows is not relevant. Like if you're on Chrome OS or you're on Mac OS, it's not relevant. But for other people, it's an absolute have to have. So they're going to have to. Right. It's the same way, like now gamers just have like, they have their MacBook and they have their gaming PC. They may just like do other things more on their gaming PC.
Yeah, this is we have people who are older who grew up through the floppy disk wars. remember when they tried to give us 3.5-inch floppies? We said no, 5.25 or die. We
I
have
had
to understand
that. My goodness.
but we have to understand that there are people that are saying that, hey, if I can buy an $80 device that fills in the gaps that my $2,000 computer doesn't have, and I don't want a, and just as you said, Renee, I would much rather buy a $300 to $700 game system, console game system to do the gaming. I don't care that this platform is not necessarily good for gaming. As for what we give up, I'm still concerned that Apple's going to lock things down more than I would like. I'm still concerned that if I have if my favorite CD ripper is a open source project that hasn't been updated since 3 years but still works perfectly fine on a machine that will accept that, hey, look, dude, I trust this app and I own this computer, so you're going to run this app even if it means my doom. I'm concerned that we're going to lose some of that power. I think that's that. Yes, I'm less worried about it today than I was after, let's say, hour 81 of watching videos, but I'm still something that's in my back, the back of my mind.
Well, it's interesting. For instance, this alternate reduced security boot, one of the things Apple called out was that for those of you who need certain kernel extensions that we're no longer going to allow, because that's that's a real insecurity.
That surprised the hell out of me. They're keeping it.
Yeah. You could do it in a less secure boot, and you can boot your own kernel extensions. It's that kind of thing
for
that
now,
encourages.
They kept saying that.
Yeah,
though.
For now, yeah. But it does encourage me a little
compatibility
bit.
Compatibility mode.
Yeah, and they have to be signed, right? So that's the only the concession.
Apple, I understand that Apple is facing a world where there's really two threats to users: privacy and security, and they've decided to double down on both. But there's a consequence to doing that, which is freedom.
Yeah.
So I understand they're trying to balance those dueling priorities. And, you know, they're probably going to come down on privacy and security because that's what most people want.
Well, I like that it's the default. Like, if you're smart enough to go in and turn it off, then you probably understand, like, the consequences of turning it off. And that seems to me like a really good user interface balance.
So
what 100%?
You talk a little bit, Renee, about the changes in Big Sur on iMore.
Yeah.
A lot of the concern, I'm trying to bring up the concern or the issues people are worried about. Now that I've done cheerleading for about 8 hours on this stuff, there are.
If we don't criticize it, Leo, they can't fix it.
Okay. True. And I will say again, the minute they ship the first, what it looks like it'll be maybe a iMac or a 13-inch MacBook Pro with Apple Silicon, I will be in line to buy it. I can't wait. But there are some concerns. Everybody has all along been concerned about the melding of iOS, iPad OS, and Mac OS. And this seems to have been furthered in odd ways. Like iPad OS is more like Mac OS, and Mac OS is more like iPad OS. Read those tea leaves for me, Renee.
So the thing that that struck me when I was talking to people this week is that Apple, and I think a lot of us, view these very differently, especially Twitter, because as much as I love Twitter, it is very loud but very niche.
Right.
And a lot of the concerns that Twitter brings up are things like, oh, the silicon is becoming similar. The operating system components are becoming similar. Things about the interface layers are becoming similar. And when I talk to people at Apple, they don't look at the products at all like that. Like, those are just little Lego blocks for them, but they're still building different products over them. And not the least of which, because both of those products are billion-dollar businesses. And until one of them starts to slide, they don't want to lose those billions of dollars that they get from both of those revenue streams. But I think, moreover, it's like what we saw. And I hate to go back to Steve's truck analogy, because it's, you know, it's labored in so many ways. But with the, like, trucks are super popular now, and in part because people started adding car-like amenities to them. Like, they became more comfortable. They started using the same components, so they became easier to manufacture. But we don't look at a truck and say, oh, it's got tires and an axle and a steering wheel and these kinds of seats. Oh, they're merging it with the car. You know, because on one side you have the SUV, on the other side you have Optimus Prime. There's like a wide range of these things. And I think to Apple, that's how they see it. They want badly the efficiencies that come from having all the same components for these things. But to them, they're still building the iPad car and the Mac truck, and they really don't understand why we keep giving them static over it.
It's more being worried than anything else. And the more I think about it, the more I realize that a lot of my concern is that I don't see the same sort of delight from developers. iPhone developers and watch developers have a certain amount of delight in coming up with something interesting and coming up with something that's unique. I don't see the same sort of delight universally in the Mac community. I'm sorry. No, I'm going to walk that back a half a step. I'm saying that once we, if we encourage people to be iPhone developers that then transition to Macs, if that's what happens, I'm wondering if we can convince iPhone developers to say, no, stop. Don't just use extra screen real estate. There are opportunities here for creating an amazing Mac app that are just as exciting as this wonderful iPhone app that you started off with. And so that's my concern, that if Apple, even without intending to, sends the signal that if you're hip, if you're new, if you're wonderful, if you're cool, if you want to change the world, you're building a Mac app. You're building an iPhone app, and now it's easy for you to actually. Yeah, you can make a Mac app too. Sure, if you want to.
It kind of won me over.
I mean, they made Messages, right? That's an incredible endorsement of Catalyst as a technology, because that is the most important app for Apple. Like, they probably, like, you can argue Safari, but just out of usage numbers. That, and that's one of the things that keeps people, when people talk about the ecosystem, they mention AirDrop, they mention Messages, you know, it's about all of that. And they're at the point now, like, they certainly weren't 3 years ago, certainly weren't 2 years ago. This year, they're putting Messages in Catalyst. And that's the sort of thing I look for, because it's not words. It's like, we're confident enough in our technology that we can finally give you sent with lasers.
Yeah.
And emoji.
But wouldn't it be more significant, at least from my point of view, to create a version of Messages for Android rather than a version of Messages for Mac? I think that would be the most an important step for the app and for the entire platform, and also for connecting people together.
Well, yeah, I don't think they have time, Andy. They're so busy making.
They
tablets.
Have time. I think that's not in their business interests. They like this walled garden. They are making. And I have to say, they're making for a gated community, it's really nice.
Well, no, I will also say that there's two things Apple does really badly: internet services and other platform apps.
Is that
apps.
Still true?
My message would be both of those things.
Is that still
I mean, there's
true?
Like, look at Windows, and like, you look at music. The music is fine on Android, but like, I don't know if it's anyone would say it's best in class on Android, and iTunes never was. So it's. And Apple's also like they have a business model based approach. Like this has to add to our money and or our ecosystem, and that doesn't either. And I don't think people would pay a subscription price.
I mean,
they bundle it with TV or something. I don't know.
I'm with you, Andy, because I use Android. But yeah,
Outside North America, people don't care about iMessage.
Yeah, they don't really. Yeah. That's actually a bigger problem, right? A lot of what Apple has been doing is to appeal to other. International markets. That's where their growth
is. Yeah, well, WhatsApp also, and its line. And,
yeah, it's hard to beat WhatsApp.
Also, this is an iffy time to put lots and lots of money into developing a messaging app with end-to-end encryption.
Yeah.
As you might say.
you might have to redo it.
Wonderful, and now we have to put in some back doors.
Yeah, you might have to do that over there. So Big Sur looks more like iPadOS. Couldn't help but notice, Jason Snell observed this in Macworld, Those touch targets look very suitable for touch.
This is so funny to me because I was watching everybody on Twitter and it became like a Rorschach test because everybody who believes that the iPad and the Mac are merging said, oh, look. So everybody who wants a touchscreen Mac said, oh, look, the touch targets are way better, bigger. That's a sure sign that it's going to be a touchscreen Mac. And then the people who just can't wait for Apple glasses are like, oh, look, they took all the sharp edges off, which is a no-no in VR. So therefore, this is part of Apple's reality OS, VR OS. And then other people are like, oh, no, it looks more like an iPad. They're finally bringing the iPad and Mac together. And the last people are like, I just want OS X back. Can you get off my lawn? It was just like it was a whole some spectrum of.
So
everyone saw what they wanted.
You don't think touchscreen Macs?
Oh, I think they could ship them in a heartbeat. It's like Eddie, like remember Steve Jobs said, no small tablets. People are going to have to shave their fingers down. Right. Nobody wants that. Nobody wants video on an iPod. Nobody wants a pencil. Nobody like, and then like Eddie Q is like, oh, but Steve, like we could get a lot more. Oh, okay, great. You guys go do it. If you screw it up, you're fired, but that's fine. You go.
And one of the things Apple, the burden on Apple is going to be on these new Apple Silicon Macintoshes. They have to be redesigned, right? You can't just ship the MacBook Pro 13 in the same case with Apple Silicon. Yeah. Nobody will.
It'd be an easy loss. It'd be an easy loss to take.
Yeah,
to do that.
You need to do a new design. What a great time to do touch.
I just want Face ID.
Definitely do that, right?
I hope.
I'm not so much excited about touch so much as I'm excited about an iPad Pro iPad Pro form factor that runs macOS, because being able to run to try out so many different like Windows designs, never enough that got me like hooked on Windows. But when Samsung sends me like a Windows 10 tablet that looks and plays exactly like an iPad, meaning that when I just want a comic book reader, it will just be a comic book reader. It's something I just want to toss in my bag and use as a book reader, or toss in my bag and just use as a movie reader. But then when I really need it to be to run my desktop apps, it's there as well. That is an amazingly compelling form factor nowadays.
And you're going to get
whether it has touch or not.
I mean, they said that you could run iOS apps on macOS, but it probably goes both ways.
In secure mode, yeah.
That's going to be a really interesting teardown when a whole bunch of engineers who do not work for Apple try to figure out what is actually physically preventing a Mac from running on an iPad Pro hardware. And I'm not talking about how do we jailbreak this so that we can install macOS on it, but I'm really keen to find out the answer to the question. Is this simply a dogmatic question of we don't make Macs that look like iPads, or is there, here are the problems we would run into if we tried to make an A12 based Mac inside like a really, really super skinny slate style form factor?
Super low RAM and zero exposed PCIe lanes, I think, are the two things that have to fix right away.
Yeah.
But still,
by the way, in the developer kit, isn't it?
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah, a little bit.
Isn't that interesting?
Pretty much exactly, right?
That's exactly what they did. 16 gigs of RAM and ports. But by the way, I don't think that was too hard for them to do. So it's conceivable.
That Silicon team is really good.
It's conceivable that they could have a very smooth gradient from I'm going to start at the watch all the way up to the Mac Pro. There could be a very smooth.
And they said a family of SoCs. That was confusing to some people, because some people assume SoC means no discrete graphics, even at the highest end.
No, that's the beauty of it. That's one of the reasons. That's one of the great benefits they're going to get. It explains why they thumbed their nose at NVIDIA for so long. They pushed Metal so hard. They struggled along with this Vega crap because they knew we're going to be doing GPUs. And, you know, we talked a little bit about gamers, PC gamers. Oh, they're never going to be interested in Apple Silicon. But wait till these game companies and the gamers see what kind of GPUs Apple can put together.
120 frame per second Fortnite.
Yeah, I see no reason why Apple to assume that Apple doesn't have equally amazing GPU capability.
Well, and also imagine ASIC. They've put so much money into not just the Mac Pro, but the concept of the new Mac Pro and the ability to, for example, if you have Apple Silicon Mac and you do a lot of Final Cut Pro work and you're like, I'm going to add a ProRes accelerator to it. But if you do something else, maybe there's like a dedicated math accelerator or audio engine accelerator. And we sort of lose the concept of what a GPU is. You bring home your super light 12-inch MacBook ARM, and you, sorry, I can't say ARM anymore, Apple Silicon, and then you plug that into whatever the dock thing is, and suddenly you're driving 9K displays. It's ludicrous what you can do when you start controlling your own silicon destiny.
Yeah. It's great. And again, it's happening at exactly the wrong time because PCs are dead. So I wish they'd done this 10 years ago. They have good 10 years before this really hits. But I honestly think that we're going to live in a different world with computing.
Well, there's the other class of computing known as boring computers. There's a reason why boring fleet style cars always sell because people need boring stuff they don't care
about.
But
Apple doesn't make boring potatoes. That's not what Apple makes. They make the
Toruses. They misunderstood. I thought you're talking about like Windows and like Windows tile.
I honestly think Windows even has much many legs to it. I think. Honestly, that's why Satya Nadella runs Microsoft. We're going to have
tools to make our glasses apps, Leo, at least for a while, though. It's hard to make glasses.
I can develop right now on VS Code running on a server on a thin client. Yeah. You could do plenty of development. What's changed is it used to be somebody would sit down at their computer. That this is it, and everything would be there. But now we can see we have many computers, many places that we would want access to that stuff. It doesn't really make sense for anything to be located in one spot.
Are you saying you can run VisiCalc on the cloud, Laporte?
Yes, I am. We have syncing, but syncing, everybody who tries syncing, it's a kind of, you know, that Dropbox kind of, that's not the future. Yeah. The future is a single source of truth that's accessible from all your devices, and it probably was doing much of the computing.
You're absolutely right, and that's why Microsoft has invested so heavily in virtualization to make the hardware irrelevant, but to make sure that their software remains completely relevant.
Yeah.
So when you're trying to when you've got a company that needs 5,000 seats. And you come to them saying that here, buy our servers instead, or better yet, buy access to our cloud power instead. You can add 10,000 seats whenever you want, and plus you won't have users who are able to screw anything up beyond the ability of a remote administrator to put things right again. So yeah, it also makes me wonder. I don't think I saw any news about Mac virtualization. Not that this is a big deal. For Apple, again, they've got every other they've got a roadmap, and that's nothing more than a detour, I think, off the main roadmap. But it would be interesting if Apple simply said that we want the Mac to have an ability and a mixed OS or mixed desktop sort of shop, and if that means that we will be able to allow people to at least buy seats, buy virtualization licenses for Mac OS, then so be it. That would be very, very interesting to me.
What was interesting, too, is before WWDC, Apple rolled out a bunch of education updates. You know, so they typically get a bunch of stuff out of the way. And one of them that I thought was really interesting was a very Google-like thing where they previously had multi-user for iPad for schools. And it turned out that some people didn't even want that. So they have a new ability where you just pick up an iPad, you do whatever you want to do, and then it just blows your session away. The next person picks it up, and it's a whole new clean environment for them, which, again, other systems have been doing for years, but that's literally your thin client there. You have an iPad that's very capable, that can push pixels around like nobody's business, but it's completely ephemeral from one student to the next.
Yeah. Well, that's what happens, right? And that's clearly the future. I know everybody's going kicking and screaming saying, but that's what we got away from with a one person, one PC.
Isn't it ambient computing, though, Leo? It's like the Star Trek computer or Jarvis or Friday,
where the core is.
I'm asking you something. Just do it for me.
Right.
That's what you want.
And Apple still, Carson's saying, well, Apple could sell secure boxes. Yeah, but they don't need to be a computer. Apple could have a very good business.
They shouldn't be.
Apple probably will have a very good business, I'd say, in 2030, selling beautiful, gleaming chrome secure enclave boxes that you put in your foyer.
Well, if you look at the three things that Tim Cook is actually willing to talk about, which probably means are the most important things that he thinks that people need to hear about Apple, it's AR and VR, it's ambient computing, and it's automation. And all of those things are what we talk about when we talk about the future of computing. It's things doing stuff for us at our command and popping up things for us to interact with when and if we need them.
Yeah.
It's very telling that one of the what I think is one of the best technologies that Apple introduced in the past 10 years back to my Mac is kind of fell by the wayside, certainly not a priority. It's mostly been rolled into features that are kind of invisible in other parts of the experience. When you get to the idea of it doesn't matter where you are in the world or what device you're using, we are going to do all the back-end stuff to make sure that you can access your files back home or back in the office if you want to. We will make sure that we can find that connection if you want to run a mirrored desktop on whatever device you're using right here and right now. That was such super powerful stuff, and I used it all the time. Admittedly, I used it on a Hackintosh Dell notebook, but still.
I use it all the time,
It points out that Apple at some point had that discussion internally and decided that we would much rather take the feature. We would much rather ask ourselves, why do people want to go back to the Mac? And if it's mostly files. Great. We'll make it really, really easy for them to sync into iCloud. And do they want to actually have open up their own their desktops remotely? OK, well, we'll make sure that there's some cross device compatibility that goes on. And we don't the idea of having a fixed piece of hardware that is running able to be woken up from sleep attached to a network 24/7 is not the most elegant solution to what we see as a problem.
Yeah. It's really interesting.
Cat unplugs it all the time.
let's take a little break, and then when we come back, you guys have been busy. I've been relying on you. I've been watching some of the developer-y stuff because basically.
Did you watch the ARKit 4 demo yet, Leo?
Not yet. No. See, yeah. I'm doing stuff. I'm watching the stuff.
The coolest stuff is, it's like I've got at least three things on my list that why the hell was this not in like the 2 hour long like keynote?
Oh, really?
This is the most awesome thing ever.
Oh, good. That's what I'm going to ask you about when we come back from the break, because I've been watching the boring stuff. You know, Swift UI, and you know, I mean,
no, but you want to code, Leo. That makes sense.
That's
for
right. This is kind of stimulated. For years, all I did was device independent code. You know, command line. Maybe a little tiny bit of GUI that didn't look like anybody's real GUI, but I'm much more interested in that because that's the point of coding for me. I'm a hobbyist, is thinking about problems and solving them in code, not the painstaking. And now that I'm doing it, I really remember how bad it is. Drawing of screens and dragging of buttons. And, yeah. Oh my God, shoot me now. It feels like 90% of Mac code these days, and certainly of iOS code, is GUI design. I like the logic underneath. You know, I like the model. I don't want the view or the view model.
Remember 2 years ago when Craig changed .red to .blue and every developer in the room went,
Yeah, it's a lot of that. So that's what I'm watching, and I realize that's the bitter pill I'll have to swallow if I want to make an iOS app. But I do love the idea of making something that will run in the entire Apple ecosystem. I think that's interesting. It's a fun project for me. And so that's what I'm watching. But you guys watch the sexy stuff. So I want to know what the future is going to hold. Rene Ritchie, Andy Iannocco. We are talking about, we're talking about the good stuff. The juicy stuff. Our show today, thank God I had a good night's sleep last night. Our show today brought to you by my mattress. If my mattress could speak, it would be moaning and groaning. It would say, get off of me. Leo, you're so fat. Why'd you gain so much weight? No, it would be saying, Leo, come to me. I think it is. It beckons to me. Come to me. Get in this lovely Casper bed with the Casper sheets and the Casper pillows. Let the glow light lull you to sleep. A beautiful world awaits. And then I start dreaming, and it's like, what am I doing? Casper can't fix your dreams, but Casper can give you a great night's sleep. It's a sleep brand that makes amazing. Here it is, my beautiful. This is my new, the newest Casper mattress. This is the hybrid. And by the way, that compact box I'm opening is that's a king size. That's the biggest they make. It's a giant mattress. You open it up, it goes. It's like in a sous vide bag, and as soon as you unseal that, the air goes and it just goes full size. But one of the things I love about Casper is no airing. I bought mattresses, much more expensive mattresses from the mattress store, where they say, well, wait 3 days before you sleep on it because we have to air it out. Not the Casper. It smells fresh. It feels good. So there are now a number of Casper models. I want to kind of describe them for you. The original Casper mattress combines multiple supportive memory foams that does something unique. It gives you a quality sleep surface with both the right amount of sink. Watch, see how my my hips go in there, and then the right amount of bounce, so you get firmness. Because I, you know, my back will. You laughing at me sleeping?
No, I'm saying, like, you know how like sometimes you watch food videos and you're really really hungry. I'm watching how you much you're enjoying that mattress.
Oh,
and
thinking it's
that
so good.
I really wish I had like a new mattress and that so I was on it right now. My mattress is 10 years
old. It's so good. It's so good. But I have to say, I did make a slight error because I unboxed it in the foyer. And it's just not a good place to nap. Let me put it that way. Oh, no. But we do. We may eventually move into the bedroom, of course. The breathable design, though, is nice, too, especially in these hot summer nights because it sleeps cool, regulates your body temperature throughout the night. People love the original Casper with over 20,000 reviews on Casper, Amazon, and Google. It's now 4.8 stars. I don't think you can get better than that. It's rapidly becoming the internet's favorite mattress, but that's just one. There's also the Wave, which features a patent-pending premium support system to mirror the natural shape of your body. The Essential, which saves you money. This is the one you give the kid going off to college or, you know, you get for your first place. Streamlined design at a price that won't keep you up at night. Still a great mattress. Still a wonderful mattress. The Hybrid, that's the one I'm sleeping on, has the pressure relief of the award-winning foam, but it also has durable yet gentle springs, which gives me a firmer edge. Casper is amazing. I love my Casper pillow, the sheets. It's just a better sleep experience all around. Now, you may say, well, that's nice, Leo. That's nice, but why should I? Because Casper, and they invented this direct-to-consumer model for mattresses. They realized early on the real expense of a mattress isn't the manufacturer, isn't the shipping, isn't the selling, isn't the marketing. It's the stores. The stores mark it up most of the time, at least doubling the price. If you didn't have mattress stores, you could save a lot of money by selling direct to customers. That's what Casper does. Now, a lot of customers, when they first said this, but I want to try before I buy, Casper said, okay, here's what we're going to do. 100 nights. You get to sleep on it for as long as 100 nights. Anytime in the first 100 nights, if you say it's not for me, we will come and get it. You don't have to jam it back in that box. We will pick it up. We will take it off your hands. We will refund you every penny. There is absolutely no risk. And I don't know about, I mean, for a free trial, that's the longest I've ever heard of. 100 nights, more than 3 months. Free shipping, painless returns in the U.S. and Canada, Renee. Get a Casper mattress today. I always say Canada, Renee. Every time I say Canada, I say Renee. Canada, Renee.
I've got so many Casper products. I really appreciate their Canadian service.
Yes. Thank you, Casper. You can save $100 towards select mattresses by visiting casper.com/MacBreak. Use the offer code MacBreak if you will at checkout so they know you saw it here. $100 just for saying, I saw it on MacBreak. Casper, Casper.com/MacBreak. Offer code is MacBreak as well. Terms and conditions apply, of course. It is so nice. In fact, I'm going to go back to bed right now. You guys take over. You guys take over.
That's so great. Welcome to Comic Book Weekly.
I know. That's what I got to stop you.
Now, DC's going to a digital approach now. A very controversial, cutting their ties to Diamond Distributors. Like, Renee, were you as freaked out as I was about that announcement?
All I'm going to say is that 2020 is the worst DCU movie I've seen.
Oh, my God, I know. I think Thanos is going to snap his fingers any minute now.
Oh, it would be a blessing at this point.
It might be.
If you can find it, Leo, Matthew Panzerino retweeted something on the AR Kit 4.0 demos that shows a visualization of this new technology they have, which basically pulls down everything from Apple Maps, including all the look around features, along with the point cloud of the vicinity that you're in, all the information you've acquired about that vicinity, and like orientation of your device and everything. And it just, it's sort of mind blowing how step by step, a year after year, they've been rapidly expanding ARKit. I'm sure for obvious reasons, but just the amount of stuff they're showing off this year is ridiculous.
So it's a video, right?
It's a Twitter video. Yeah, he retweeted it a couple days ago.
Okay,
if you can get past all the bread,
ARKit
in his timeline,
ARKit 4. I do not think it's possible for anyone who doesn't hoover up what's going on in AR to internalize how wild this is. This is the metaverse building equivalent to, he just tweeted it out. Explain. This is he's retweeting Joel Bernstein. And I take it this is the Apple presentation you were talking about.
Yeah.
Without worrying about any of this complexity.
Yeah, well, I just missed it because it was only.
So when using TOO tracking,
so let's see here's the video.
Map data from Apple Maps around your current location. Part of this data is a localization map that contains feature points of the surrounding area that can be seen from the street. Then, with the localization map, your current location and images from
your device. Well, this is just map info. This is not AR kit.
The rest of it is all AR kit.
So you mean I can take all this data that Apple's been generating for years for maps and and their version of, what do they call it? They don't call it Street View, but
look around.
Yeah.
And it's now available as data for my augmented reality app?
Yes.
Whoa. That's why
for experience, if you don't make apps, but experience. Yeah.
That's why he's talking about the metaverse, right?
Yeah.
So what do you think is going to happen?
Grand Theft Auto, Cambridge, Massachusetts.
I hope more than that. Well, the metaverse implies that you would be able to put on your Apple-branded AR glasses and be in Cambridge, right? And I could go and meet Andy at the MIT flea market and we could wander around, right?
It would be an interesting application to say that I don't if all I have to do is transmit the part that is Andy and I don't have to transmit the part behind him, but we're not talking about chat here. That would still be a really inefficient way of doing it. I think this is one of those really great features where the opportunities for a really, really clever developer to make something great with it are apparent enough that you just go ahead and do it and then let those folks create those opportunities. Like, imagine an architectural app where you want to figure out, like, what will happen to shadow lines if we put this building here, or what will happen if I'm considering visiting this location or having a music festival in this location at this time of year, and also I have access to 50 years of daily weather data for that date in the year, and now I can actually figure out not only figure out what it's going to look like, but also model what the traffic flow is going to be. As to what actual consumers are going to benefit from it beyond look around, anybody's guess. I think that some features are there for this is such an interesting. We've spent so much money developing this data set. We would not be realizing the value of this data set if all we did was use it to enhance maps. We want to enhance the entire platform, and the only way to enhance the entire platform is to make a new resource available to developers, and that's why they're making this data set available.
So, do I need a new iPad Pro with LiDAR to take advantage of this? I know as the developer, I don't, but it would work better.
It's better. Well, it's going to be in stages. Like right now it's on the iPad Pro because they just needed to get LiDAR out into the world. And they showed some demos now with the new depth API and with the new heat map for, you know, measuring depth, all the things that you can do with that. And everybody presumes that's coming to the iPhone, you know, this year and to Apple Glasses eventually. But, you know, just to make Andy's MacBreak Weekly experience complete, you could imagine like Pokemon Go or Wizards United, where they are actually interacting with the real world. It's not just a digital thing happenstantially layered on top of you, but it's running around trees, it's climbing buildings, you look up and there's the Hogwarts dragon curled around the bank on your street down the corner. There's King Kong on the Empire State Building, because I've always wanted to see King Kong on the Empire. Yeah. And they announced that too. They announced that you can place AR objects right now with iOS 14 in what they call points of interest, like major geographical locations around the world.
This is interesting. Yeah, so this is essentially a heat map that shows not temperature but depth.
Yeah.
Closer to me, it's cooler. The farther away, it's hotter. And that is a smooth gradient. That is very... Yes. So that's why you could place...
And totally occluded. Like you can do full object occlusion within that map.
Wow.
That's one of the biggest steps forward for AR is for the ability for, okay, your Pokemon to walk behind a chair and the chair is covering up where is occluding a character or an object that's supposed to be walked behind it. It's really, really cool. It was very, very cool to say, everybody gather around, was it 3 years ago, 4 years ago, WWC, gather around this strangely tech wood grain textured table.
Yeah.
And play ping pong.
And enjoy our AR experience. experience. No. Don't move the phone off the table. It has to be there. But it's going to be this. This is a great forward-looking thing for when we do have the sort of a HoloLens style wearable AR glasses, where it's not just projecting a small piece of information that's useful. It's not just displaying a widget. It is actually doing magic leap sort of stuff, because that's when you get things like, I'm going to put a display on that wall over there that simply reminds me of like when someone is online or not, because I need to talk to that person. And that's when you get interesting, I will say hippie like, but really still very, very interesting interfaces like what Google showed off at I/O a few years ago, but never delivered on, saying that, well, yes, we could, when giving you map directions that you're following as you're walking, just give you like floating arrows to go around things. But wouldn't you rather be like following a fox that just the foxes and the fox is waiting at the street corner and sitting and like cleaning its paws because he's waiting for you to catch up, and then he's going to like actually go left to show you to keep following the fox. Isn't that more interesting? Because it taps into software that's in our brains that is pre-language. You know, there was a time in which we didn't have turn left at this next intersection, make sure that you're on Elm Street, but simply that, oh, well, I'm going to, I know that there's a fire over there and I want to go to the fire, so I'm just going to walk until the fire is getting bigger and bigger in my mind's eye. That's not just cute. It's not just the ultimate caveman skeuomorphism. This is making things that are things that you can infer how it works, that you're wired up to simply understand that this is what you're meant to do, as opposed to learning a clever new interface. So this is why this sort of stuff could be quite transformative.
So you're going to
your point earlier, Leo, and Andy's point now, the Reality Kit has also added video as a texture. So you can do things like place a screen on the wall and watch your TV in AR, but also map the screen to like an object and have an animated face, or map it to water like a river and have an animated texture. So it's just ramping up the realism that you can deliver. And also the opportunistic interfaces we all see in the movies, right? Like the screen just appears in front of him and he taps it. And it's really the gestures that are doing the work. But as a human, we relate to whatever the physical object is in front of us. So if you're just mapping a video of an interface and reacting to what we're moving our hands on, it just makes that experience nicer. And that's again, shipping in iOS 14.
Watch as I run this augmented reality vase all over this chair.
The power to be your best.
It's apparently doing ray casting. I don't see any lighting effects, but at least it knows.
That's what Carrie's bedroom looked like when she was a kid.
Yeah, there you go. Now,
the face is always at attention to the surface of that object.
It's just like you're running that around the chair. Yeah, that's pretty amazing. And the object's moving. This means, I would guess, that LiDAR in every future Apple device. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's privacy respecting too, which in ways that regular cameras have been problematic in the past, which is a nice benefit for Apple.
Yeah. Because LiDAR and radar are really important technologies, because you can't. It's very clever to say, hey, this device is a camera that's taking pictures at 60 frames per second. As soon as people say camera taking pictures, they don't want any part of it, particularly if you're in the room with it. But when you say, well, no, it's actually radar, so it's not actually seeing anything. It's only taking really, really high depth, like distance measurements. And let's not mention that if it's sufficient technology, that it's actually mapping everybody's faces as they go in, so they're getting much, much more information than pictures. But you know what I mean.
Here's the face mapping demo that you were talking about, and this is more than Memojis, right? This you could map it onto.
I mean, you can make Snapchat filters.
Yeah. Wow. Wow. That's exciting. I must say that is a breakthrough technology.
I think it's more one of the many things that are impressive for this are when it becomes stuff like when it becomes like a plugin for iMovie. Not even Final Cut, but just I want to make a movie, but it's only me and my two friends, and neither of them are dogs or orcs. And I really need a dog in this scene. Let's just do motion like on the fly motion capture so that this character that's the sort, because I keep coming back to how wonderful, how incredible it is that you have all of these YouTube creators that are well on, in their 20s or in their teens who grew up with non-linear editing and a high-definition camera right on their phones. And just like I learned how to write because I had access to word processors from basically the first time I tried to use the, I tried to learn how to write, which gave me certain advantages that other generations didn't have. Once we get into the sort of thing where now the generation that the Generation Z or Double Z or whatever they're calling it these days, this generation says whenever they have creative ideas that involve, actually, I really want the story I'm telling to take place in space, but imagine that that the Mongol hordes are a space conquering race. And 10 minutes later or 20 minutes later, just by downloading some stock 3D imagery or by building it themselves, their story that they're telling is taking place wherever they want it to happen. I'm so excited to see what happens when that becomes casual and free.
Yeah. What else did you see that you like? Fill me in. Save me the time.
Yeah. One of the biggest things was I think there's only one area in which Apple is objectively failing. They are not doing the job and is reaching a crisis point, and it is wrong that they aren't making visible steps to fix it. And that's the app review process, making it so opaque and so, nope, we made this decision and now you are powerless to change it. They made some announcements that are basically saying that, number one, if we have a problem with your app, we will still allow you to do bug fixes. So we're not going to say that a security problem has to stick because we don't like the way that you're doing it using a controller. And number two, they are at least giving lip service to saying that now we are giving you more opportunities to debate why your app should not be affected by this change. And also not only it's almost like looking at a change to the Constitution, saying that not only that, but you can also argue that this rule itself is bogus and you need to change it. And the idea that they're even putting that into like a public statement during WWDC shows that they are aware that they've been hugely dropping the ball on this and that they need to make changes. I thought that was one of the biggest pieces of news from WWDC, because that is the thing that whether developers are complaining in public or complaining in private when I'm talking to friends of mine, that is the one thing that makes my jaw drop every single time, that says that, wow, you make one of the most important there are four people that I could say this of. You are making one of the most important and popular apps on the Mac platform, and Apple is just screwing you around, and you're being given no indication that they're even thinking about this carefully, that they're just simply a low-level person. They saw like a red light come up on a panel, so they pressed the abandonate button, and you can't do anything about it. And it's always shocked me every single time. I am so glad to see that at least we'll see if this actually pays off, but I'm so glad to see that Apple is recognizing that they should probably not be screwing over developers quite so gleefully as they have been in the past.
I didn't have a chance to see it all, but I think there were some IAP changes too that people said were positive coming out of WWDC.
What's the IAP, in-app purchases?
The in-app purchases. Yeah. Some people seemed I didn't have a chance to follow up on it, but some people seemed happy with some of the changes that were being made there.
Was this all precipitated by the fight with Basecamp and DHH over hay, or is it just
exacerbated by? I mean, yeah. I think a lot of things.
Some
like
of it's also
as
the
society,
EU.
We've had enough. Well, yeah. We've been stuck at home for months. The entire world is insane, and like an app review letter is just too much at this point.
That's it. I can't take it anymore. I
think that's true. Like, I think there's so many things in our society that have been bad for so long, and I'm not making any false equivalencies about where app review relates to any of the other
snapping.
Things. But we've had it.
It's done.
We don't want our Google YouTube TV is raising its prices. I saw Twitter explode this morning. We have just had enough.
Yeah.
As a society, we were saying this far, no further. You will not make us pay anymore.
Yeah.
My kid is taking clarinet lessons. We're stuck in the house with them all day. I'm going to be a man at somebody in Apple. It's going to be you.
Yeah.
I did see that somebody tweeted that his kid had taken up violin lessons and his Apple Watch said, I hear a siren. So
did you fall
everybody's
down?
A critic.
Did you fall down?
Did you just
in judo have class? A heart did attack? You fall down?
The Statler and Waldorf app for the Apple Watch.
Somebody said that they've been working on the soap app since before COVID-19. Apparently, they've always been into hand washing.
So then, why is there no brush your teeth app? I mean, I give Kevin Lynch a huge amount of credibility. I mean, he was the Flash guy for a very long time. But where is my brush your teeth app?
I agree. Can it only be a matter of time? You're happy about sleep, though, right? Micah's so happy about that. Yeah.
I heard some people are complaining, I'm myself included initially, that it doesn't do as much as other sleep apps. Like other sleep apps will show you light sleep, heavy sleep, REM sleep. Right. But when I asked about it, they said like they have no understanding how they're getting those numbers. And they don't want to put Apple's name on anything that doesn't. Like is it because they know they'll get all sorts, like everything will be scrutinized by every scientist in the world. So they want to make sure that if they do ever offer that, it's like those numbers are provable using as many scientific models as possible.
I'll tell you the other reason, privacy. The guy who came up with a lot of this is Philippe Kahn, formerly of Borland and Turbo Pascal. The guy invented the smartphone camera. His latest business, Motion X, is all about accelerometers and taking data and using his data sets for machine learning. I talked to him on Triangulation a couple of years ago when he was just shipping these. And they're sold under the Serta Beauty Rest brand, I think. These paddles that go under your mattress, I've had them for some time, that give you all of that information. Deep sleep, light sleep, REM, breath, heart rate, resting heart rate, all of that stuff. And I've had that for some time. I've also had this Aura Ring, which actually probably does know a little bit more because it's right on your finger, so it can actually measure your temperature, your heart rate. I don't know if it gets it couldn't get breathing. But Philippe said it's based on machine learning models. They collect millions and millions of data points, and over time they can kind of understand what they're seeing. And I have to say that the Serta paddles and the Ring pretty much agree, within, say, 10-20%, the amount of time I spent in deep sleep and stuff. And I think Apple may also want to dodge that bullet, because in order for them to get that kind of learning, A, they're just catching up. They're just starting now. And B, they'd have to kind of collect data from people, a lot of data.
They did it for dancing, Leo. I mean, they can detect different leg and arm movements for dancing.
Dancing is awesome.
Yeah.
Dance.
That is the first time I've ever seen a presenter at any tech conference dance.
We're gonna play the Jonathan Morrison, Jonathan Mann video again, aren't we?
I think when Steve Jobs announced the termination of iOS 9, didn't he dance on that cardboard coffin?
That was wild. I had never seen that before. Ben Thompson put that in his Stratechery column about all this. The funeral for Mac OS 9, I had never seen before.
And there's that gif of Tim Cook dancing at the Apple Bono concert.
Yeah. You too. All right, so there's been some dancing. I wouldn't necessarily call that dancing.
Oh, true.
And actually, Steve
does
not.
But Jules did it at the keynote. Jules was demonstrating the Apple Watch dance.
That was very, very well done. I was impressed. Yeah. The funeral for, here, let me play a little bit of this. I had never, you guys remember this? I guess I wasn't at this. This was the funeral for Mac OS.
This is the Undertaker from wrestling, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yes.
That's his theme, yes. They have a coffin, and it ain't cardboard, Andy. They have a fancy coffin on stage. They got the organ music. There's fog.
Spinal Tap.
Yeah.
Ladies and gentlemen.
All I need is Stonehenge coming down. And then Steve opens the coffin, pulls out a giant box Mac OS 9 and reads its eulogy, which is hysterical. This was 18 years ago. Or no, more than that. Yeah, 18 years ago, May 6, 2002.
Mac OS 9 was a friend to us all. He worked tirelessly on our behalf.
Are we sure Bolts didn't write this?
I don't know. It's very funny.
It made the point quite effectively.
Yes.
Any developer who thought, I bet that I can still get by without having to support OS X for a little while. No, it's over.
It wasn't, by the way, it was long ago had been supplanted by OS X, but he just wanted to tell everybody, stop. And I think the coffin, he puts a rose on the coffin, and I think I think it actually descends into the stage.
I did that for North today. I made a tiny Canadian coffee puffin for North.
There it goes. Bye bye, coffee.
They say late at night on the Apple campus when the moon is full, you can hear a howling reverberating off of those curved walls.
Well, we got to do that for Mac OS 10. It's over. It's 11.
Yep.
They took it to 11.
I think that this is, if you're going to do it, this is the time.
Yeah.
Makes sense. Yeah. No,
this is so significant that it really is almost like a relaunch of the platform. If anything, I think that they were a little bit conservative because if they're going to be this disruptive, and I mean that in the neutral sense of the word, they may as well go for broke. But I'm so glad that they have made all of these changes because that one of the reasons why I was for the past few years, less last year, that I've been worried about the future of the Mac was that, my God, the Mac Finder and the Mac UI looks so frumpy.
Yeah.
It looks like the first 10 minutes of that movie where, like, the male or the female nerd is, like, clearly the costume department said, okay, now remember, and a half hour into the movie, like, they're gonna take all of these elocution lessons, they're gonna get a whole new wardrobe, or they're gonna find out that they're a prince. So we gotta make sure they look really, really dumpy at the very, very beginning. And that's what Mac OS looked like compared to every other operating system that I've seen.
Yeah.
So I'm glad. Wow. So that's if nothing else, Apple really, really achieved being able to convince people that, no, we're not just hanging on to Mac as a development platform for iOS and watchOS. We really do believe it. They've been saying it all along, but I'm sure that I've said this time and time again on the show. But what I've been looking for is give me a sign. Don't just keep telling me.
Right.
Actually show me proof that you intend to keep something known as a Macintosh for at least the next 5 years.
Do we have any reason to believe Ming-Chi Kuo? I'm sorry. Even saying it. Oh,
before we switch this, can I just say that I do want to sneak in and just let a little bit of the air out of the tires of the new messages and FaceTime app icons? Just a little bit, because they are so puffy compared to everything else.
They look
like marshmallows.
You installed the developer preview.
Yes.
So I haven't. And I'm guessing Andy hasn't.
I haven't. Yeah. I have, rather.
Oh, you have? Yeah. So tell me what you think of it. Start with Renee. What do you think it's inflated?
No, I really like overall, I really, really like it. It is refreshed. It is lighter. There's better affordance because everything is a little bit more space. It can breathe. I think the completely transparent menu bar is a little bit bitsy. Like it lacks the cohesiveness of an actual bar, but you can hide it now, which is great. And I think some of the new icons are fine, but I think overall, the watch gets to have round icons and Apple TV gets to have rounded rectangle icons and iOS has those super lips icons. And I think it's a disservice to the Mac to have them lose their own distinction that they've had for years. And that could be like arbitrary shapes or angled rectangle or something that lets the Mac have its own identity and just make them the same old super ellipses that are on iPhone. So I don't think all of the icons are bad. I think some are flatter and some are puffier and they should normalize all of that. But in general, I think the switching the icons to be exactly like Mac or sorry, shaped like iPhone and iPad apps is a disservice to the Mac.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm not a design guy, so I don't have any strong feelings one way or the other. It definitely looks a little.
It is interesting. Like you can choose your wallpaper to be that one, which is just like iOS, but they also have a traditional Mac like picture of.
Oh, they do have a picture of Big Sur.
Yeah,
oh.
Of Big Sur that you can use instead. Oh, you get the and both of them will work in light and dark mode.
Oh, that's interesting.
So choose your allegiances. Are you hashtag team iPhone background or hashtag team Mac background?
Because the iPhone background is the one we've all seen, which is abstract layers of color to sort of simulate Big Sur, the water, the mountains, the ocean. But
the power, the beauty.
Those I gotta say, those bars are big. Those icon bars are ginormous.
Do you want to touch them, Leo?
I do. I'm trying to touch them right now. Yeah.
Yeah. And I absolutely accept that people are going, like Renee said, that people are reading into these design changes, both on iOS and macOS, the way they want. It really does look like they're making this much more touch friendly, whether that's to have simply to have visual consistency with iOS, or whether that really is the idea of we're going to need that the title bars of these windows to be grabbable by a fingertip as opposed to a mouse or a trackpad. I see a lot of error around there. I see a lot of transparency around there that I'm still trying to get used to. I see them trying to minimize the visual impact of the menu bar, as if part of that message is to say, don't look for features up there. You're supposed to look for features within content windows. I like it. I did find it more off-putting after I finished my first day with it than I did this morning when I was messing around with it. I really think that I'm trying to figure out if using Safari is going to be the biggest tell to what Apple wants a Mac app to look like. And if so, I'm kind of hoping that Apple dials it back a little bit.
They spent a lot of time on Safari.
Yeah, it just feels like, remember the difference between iOS 7 and, let's say, iOS 9, when they absolutely decided that, okay, it's time to get rid of the original iPhone interface and start updating a little bit. It was dark. It was like a salt flat where there was no, let's get rid of all the colors. Like, let's make all of like the text really, really skinny. Let's not give you any sort of indication of one thing on this screen is more important than something other, that something is trying to get your attention. But you saw them dial that back over the next couple of years. We're going to see a certain once it's off the ranch and into the hands of not real people yet, but closer, one step closer to real people in the form of developers who can give lots of feedback. I'm keen to see how real people react to it when the public beta hits very, very soon, because if it doesn't feel like a Mac, you've kind of messed it up. And it still feels like a Mac, but it is a big, big step.
Yeah. Couple of things. Privacy forward, very much. In fact, there's a privacy report that tells you what trackers are on a page. A lot of people have Ghostery or other plugins on other browsers to do that. That's nice. Apple is also, and there's some real consternation in the ad community about this, essentially giving you a pop-up that says, hey, you know, you have there's an ad tracker that's being used to deliver personalized ads for you. Do you want to allow that, or you want to ask the app not to do that? And by surfacing that, this has always been in the settings, but it's deep within, so nobody knows about it. By surfacing that as part of this new user permissions dialogue that all apps will have on iOS, there's a lot of concern that Apple, is going to kill its IDFA.
I think a lot of that I thought was like, because a bunch of people who I see complain about nothing but ads and the tracking and all goes on are suddenly like worried about the ad companies because Apple's doing it. And to me, that just smells of like Apple headlines. And I think Apple does this. They did this with battery shaming, and all we saw was Adobe apps in the battery shamer. And then they fixed it. They did it with Bluetooth, and all you saw was all these apps surreptitiously asking for your Bluetooth information, and they fixed it. And they just did it with the clipboard, and we saw TikTok asking for the clipboard every 3 seconds, and they fixed it. To me, it's like that's what you do. You disclose and you get consent. And the ad industry, if they have any pride at all in their business model, if they think it's a good business model, that it's good for them and it's good for us, then they should have no problem with us actually being aware of what's happening on those web pages. And if they think there's issues with it, this highlights them and they can fix it. I did hear, you know, I do agree with Ben Thompson that it does make it harder for smaller competitors because Google and Facebook have a tremendous capacity to serve you first-party cookies that, you know, startup advertising and smaller networks just simply can't compete with. And so it's even with GDPR, it's easier for Google and Facebook to handle that than it is for the small companies. But I still feel like looking at it from the business point of view is the wrong end of it. You look at it from the user point of view. And for the user, this is a huge win.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And also the commitment that Apple has to this is very, very important. I've always thought that one of the problems that Apple had in its, we're the only company that really cares about privacy. The problem with that messaging was that, but we really don't care if people keep continuing to track you and collect information through our web browser or through anybody else's web browser. This absolutely is a reversal of that. Not only because this is exactly the sort of position that is important in this day and age, to not simply say, I don't know if you know it, but there's like 14 trackers after you. Safari is like, let me give you the report on exactly what the battle is like behind the scenes right now. Here is every single instance of a website that's trying to get information and how they're trying to do it and letting you have control of the situation. And so just this week, there were a whole bunch of new like hardware-based web APIs that got released that Apple has announced they're not going to support simply because it allows it's an opportunity for extended fingerprinting to identify you, even though you've taken measures to make sure that your browser and your incident can't be fingerprinted. This is an important thing for the Safari brand. Apple has to, for everything that Apple does, they have to say, here is what I know: that Chrome is the most powerful browser in the world. I know that Firefox is the most popular open browser in the world, but we have Safari, and here's the unique advantage that we can deliver. And then it's not only it will not bog down your computer as though it's been thrown into a Scottish bog. But it will also, not only will it not drain your battery, but also it is the most proactively security oriented browser that you can install right now.
Yeah.
And I'll add to that a little bit in saying that, you know, and not really Google's fault, but Google's in a position now that Microsoft used to be in, that they are so popular that people are coding for Chrome rather than coding for the open web. And it's not that there aren't web standards, it's that they're like more like web suggestions, and every vendor implements them in a way that best suits that company, because it's just natural. And Google sees everything as a web app, and Apple sees everything as a native app, and they have different interpretations. But the end result is there's a lot of stuff that doesn't work as well on Safari. And the only sort of ability Apple has to affect change beyond that is that the WebKit engine runs everything on iPhone and iPad, which are hugely popular.
Right.
So by doing things like this, they sort of force the web a little bit in their direction too.
We haven't talked about – go ahead.
So just to quickly, you notice that you don't see very many websites right now, at this point, that say, "Ooh, I'm not going to let you proceed until you turn your ad blocker off or whitelist us." You see it sometimes, but whereas this would be a way that the entire ad community could say, "No, we are going to force you to turn off ad blockers, because otherwise we are not going to allow any content to pursue in any way, shape, or form." Because they tried that initially, but they got the metrics back and say, when we make somebody do something to read an article that this person hasn't even read yet, their reaction is to leave and go to one of the other 18 terabillion pages that are on
the
internet.
GDPR, yeah.
Exactly. So they're not. Apple is doing something they know that they can do. It's not as though you're going to see a pop-up saying that, "I'm sorry, Safari is not supported by this content. Please switch to a less security intense browser instead."
Yeah. Please use an Android phone if you want to.
Okay, we're going to do this.
No,
now.
But I mean,
Renee, I wasn't planning on doing this right now. But
I'm just saying, because like even if you change your default web browser on iOS, it's still the WebKit rendering engine. Like it only goes so far down that stack.
Yeah, it's such a good thing that, you know, we don't have things like apps on iOS, you know, stealing information from the clipboard. We never see that.
No, I agree with you. I'm just saying, like, they have an unusual amount of control to wield this as a weapon on iOS devices.
Yeah, and look what Apple did. It wasn't just TikTok. It's like 56 other apps that were just saying, "Hey, let me look at your clipboard. What are you doing there? What are you doing?" That's good. That's great. Apple's
It's terrible when it happens with things like Hey, you know, or some of our friends. There are some really bad apps that Apple's in a position to go, "Okay, bye-bye. Make Chrome OS apps now." You
know? Yeah, the only issue is when it looks like it's in their for their business reasons as opposed to protect users. And sometimes it does look that way. Maybe they can make an argument that it's not, but it does look that way.
Yeah.
How credible is Ming-Chi Kuo? He's saying... He's the analyst who sends out these notes, and he's saying there will be a 13.3-inch MacBook Pro running Apple Silicon and an iMac. I have to say, he says it's a 24-inch iMac, which makes me think, what? Why would they?
It doesn't exist yet, yeah.
Why would they do that? But it is an all-new form factor, and that they would both launch probably in the third or fourth quarter of this year, or early 2021.
I like that because Apple's not nostalgic, but those, I believe, were the first Intel Macs that shipped.
Oh,
the
that's
MacBook
interesting.
Pro and the iMac, which is an interesting mirror.
Yeah.
I'm just guessing here, but I would be surprised if Apple did not want to make the MacBook Air or the MacBook Nothing one of the first Macs out the gate, because people are buying that not for power and not for flexibility. They're buying it for freedom from physical tethers to this cursed ground, and the ability to simply say, by the way, the MacBook that used to get 10 hours of battery life now gets 14 to 15 hours of battery life. That is immediately convincing people that this is one of the reasons why we switched to ARM. It is flying the flag for I'm trying to figure out if I'm just being sort of like an Apple marketing dupe by calling it Apple Silicon instead of ARM. I'm still navigating that choice, so I'm sorry.
They never said x86. This is the way I mentally justified it. Steve announced PowerPC to Intel, but they do have ARM64 on the technical slides. It's just it's not an ARM.
They said
chip
ARM
the way
in
that
the State
buy
of the Union.
Chip.
Yeah, yeah. They said
yeah.
I think it's important to say
it's not a Cortex chip. It's an Apple chip.
Yes, it's not ARM. As delivered by Qualcomm,
or by ARM.
Well, ARM doesn't deliver anything, right?
No, but they make the Cortex that people can just fab if they want to, like the Cortex design. They Apple's not using the Cortex design, so it's a nebulous thing because it's not do people insist on calling AMD an x86 chip? Most of them just call it an AMD chip,
right?
And they're fine with it. But I think
Apple Silicon's fine, and it doesn't. It is a marketing term, Andy, but I think it's also distinguished from ARM. I wish they would announce their new name sooner than later, so we don't have to keep saying it, because it's a lot of syllables.
Trionic. Maybe it's Trionic.
Yeah. They'll have a new naming and numbering scheme, I presume, to distinguish them from the iOS chips, or maybe not. Maybe it'll just be the A15 or something.
X14. Yeah. Just go right after the x86 heart.
Oh, that'd be cool. The reason I ask, actually, this is for me. I'm asking for a friend because I don't think I want to buy another computer of any kind until I see these. And I can hold out till the end of the year. I don't know if I can hold out till next
year. But you're not Alex. Alex wants no part of a brand new ARM machine that he doesn't know how Final Cut and all his rendering stuff runs on. Yeah. He's much rather you buy it, Leo, and tell him in the next 2 years
and I'd much
how
rather
painful it is. And
he buys the Mac Pro.
Yeah.
And he
can
tell me about that. So we're different people.
Yeah.
Yes.
I honestly, I've been getting this question. I'm sure we've all been getting this question like a million times by people who read us, listen to us, or, join us for dinner. But I keep telling people that if you need a Mac this year, maybe if you can wait until the fall to see what kinds of hardware Apple releases as part of this first wave, do that. But I wouldn't wait a year and have if I'm stuck with like a 10-year-old Mac that is not getting the job done, that I cannot edit videos the way that I want to do it, I can't run Photoshop the way I want to do it, or any other reason like that, I still feel as though any Intel Mac you buy this year is going to have at least the 5-year utility life that I expect to get from any brand new computer.
Yeah, as Jaws told Gruber on the talk show, he bought a 16-inch MacBook Pro for his daughter because she's going to college this fall. She needs something now.
Yeah.
Jason Snell said he did the same thing for his daughter, although it was just a MacBook Air. He couldn't afford the 16. But and actually, a MacBook Air is a perfect college computer.
But I do the
that
same
makes
thing
sense.
Because I have to run Final Cut. Like, I depend on running Final Cut, and I'm sure it's going to run on the ARM Macs.
Yes.
But I know, like, every plugin I buy, everything is going to be exactly the way that I need it to run for the next few years. And I can look at people on Twitter and see how it's working for them and then make a decision after. Like, just don't buy that Rev A board.
I'll be the guinea pig. I will buy the Rev A board.
I would buy an Air in a heartbeat. I would buy an Apple Silicon Air in a heartbeat. An Apple Silicon Mac Pro, I would stick with Intel for
a what if they did a MacBook Pro 13 that was almost as thin as an Air, like thinner than the existing one, which they could do, right? And had 20-hour battery life. That might be, and had no bezel. That might be, so it's
I would want it, but I need Final Cut. And so
if it doesn't run Final Cut,
the Pro workflow.
Yeah, yeah.
Like you talk to Brianna Wu, and they barely support the 3D app she uses on Intel anymore.
Right. Yes. 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 That was a good tweet. If one of the first Apple Silicon based Macs that Apple releases this fall were a Mac Mini, which is the undisputable, the desktop computer that I want in my office to when I make my upgrades, I would almost certainly buy it. I would not mind being eating the first generation of dog food, partly because I'm intrigued by what an ARM processor is going to be giving me 2 years from now. And I can't afford to buy two $1,500 desktops in 2 years just out of curiosity. On a notebook, when it comes to a notebook, I'm still sort of like hedging my bets. I don't know what I want right now. I would not hesitate to buy an ARM based Mac Mini if one released. I'm not gonna buy an iMac because an iMac is just not what I want. I'm still skeptical. I'm still the MacBook Pro is still not necessarily what I want. It doesn't instill joy in me immediately, as Marie Kondo might say. And so I'm still trying to figure out if that's what I want. I'm still even trying to figure out if a $2,000 laptop is still even relevant to how I use computers in 2021, as opposed to the mid 2000s. But all I'm trying to communicate here is that I don't think anybody is going to be hosed if they buy an Intel based Mac this year. You always have to balance. My advice to people is always the same, that don't consider a hardware upgrade until you have a firm idea of how it's going to either solve a problem for you or create an opportunity for you. But the other thing is that if you need a computer today, think about everything you're going to lose in the next year by waiting until next year for a machine that might never actually come or might be irrelevant to your needs. Like, imagine if I were holding off on a really, really bad old MacBook for 2 years, saying, I know there's a major redesign of the MacBook Pro coming. So, oh, by the way, here it is. And now it has a keyboard you can't possibly use. So you were kind of an idiot for waiting 2 years when you could have been using the last generation of good for you MacBooks.
True.
Yeah. And certainly, I think we've all converged on this. We talked about it on Sunday on Twitter as well, that if you need a Mac, there's no reason not to buy a Mac right now. There's no reason to delay. And if you don't, then it might be worth waiting. I don't remember, but my sense is those G4s felt pretty old pretty quick. Not because they were old, but just because you wanted the new Intel Mac.
But Intel was providing such – well, there's a tweet by Steve Troughton-Smith that he put up yesterday where he said, the developer transition kit, which is a two-year-old iPad chip, runs x86 64 code in emulation faster than the Surface Pro X runs it natively. Qualcomm, what are you even doing? And that again, this is like the worst that we will ever see Mac OS running on Apple Silicon.
And it's running okay.
And Apple's done year-over-year improvements. They said 100 times in 10 years. Improvement. So, and Intel is still doing so badly that it's hard not to imagine within 2-3 years they'll have a significant lead. Not in terms of like what a Xeon can do, but in terms of power per watt and what Apple can do in like the iPhone. People complain about MacBooks all the time, how hot they are. Nobody complains about how hot an iPad is, and it's fast. So there are certain aspects that are highly appealing about what this combination is going to bring.
Yeah. And the benchmarks are out, and I don't want to report on them because they're out illegally. Apple was very clear if you got one of the developer kits, you were not to benchmark it. But they do leak out because people forget that if you Geekbench it, it's going to be posted on the site unless you say otherwise. And you know, it's not as super fast, but it's pretty impressive. The 2-year-old architecture could run as well as it has.
And almost everyone has been running it in emulation. They've been downloading Geekbench from the Mac App Store, which is the Intel version, and running it through Rosetta.
So that is really...
And so the numbers you're seeing is the emulated
performance numbers. Yeah, that's really bad. Yeah.
On an iPad chip.
Yeah. So I know I'm excited. I mean, honestly, if my real advice would be, you probably don't need a computer. Just stop buying computers. That's your mistake.
What's a computer, Leo? That's a computer.
What they want you to do.
You don't need a computer.
But you don't need no stinking computer.
Yeah. Apple Design, there are other stories. We'll go to those real quickly before we get your picks of the week. Apple Design Award winners came out today, I think. And Darkroom, which is a beautiful photo editor. It's a, you know, actually Darkroom on iPad to me is why I don't need Photoshop or Lightroom. It's just gorgeous from Bergen.
It's so good.
I haven't played this game, Loom with 3 O's from Iorama Studio. It's an animation playground with music creation tools. We'll be doing this on iOS Today next week. We're going to do all of the we'll demo and play with all of the award winners. Shaper 3D, which is a CAD app for the iPad. Wow. that's wow. Again, wow. Yeah. An iPad and Apple Pencil. I haven't tried it. Later this year, they say it's going to use the LiDAR scanner so you can generate 3D and 2D floor plans. Wow. Just wow. Staff Pad. I haven't used any of these. This converts handwritten musical notation into digital sheet music. That's cool. And then you can use your Apple Pencil with it after you've done that. In the game series, I do agree with this, the Apple Arcade game Sayonara Wild Hearts, which is not only beautiful, it's an album. It's a music album, and it's got a great soundtrack. That's from Simago from Malmo, Sweden. And another beautiful one, Sky, Children of the Light, which is a social quest that actually comes from that game company. They did something very similar. I think it was on the Xbox or the PlayStation that I played that I really liked. And this is kind of the continuation. Song of Bloom from indie developer Philip Stollenmeier. A one-man crew. Looks like there's popcorn involved. I don't know. Song of Bloom. Where Cards Fall.
So beautiful.
Yeah. The Game Band. Publisher's Snowman. That looks like a kind of a platform puzzle game, right?
That was one of the inaugural Apple Arcade games where, like, it was just so moody and atmospheric. Yes. And you would build these card structures.
Yeah.
Gorgeous.
Yeah. So there you go. The winners of the Apple Design Awards, 8 developers, 8 apps. I would say the ones I've played, they're all stellar. I mean, it really just shows you what great work is being done on iOS. Well done.
Yeah.
Apple is adding.
I do wish there was a Mac category, like just to Andy's point previously, that maybe they're waiting for the relaunch before they have a Mac category again.
Well, then they can have a unified category. It just runs. The Apple Silicon category.
Wouldn't it be great to see, like, at least maybe it's a special award or a special competition for shortcuts? I think that we're seeing such sophisticated and interesting shortcuts these days. Almost like it would be like the best demo. It'd be like the best use of one finger touch on an Apple Watch, or the best use of one tap on a what
but
one,
does Federico
or
win or does Matthew win? Great.
Yeah, really. There's only two choices. Like, I honestly would love to see things like Clips be highlighted because I want to see more apps using Clips. So there's an opportunity for Apple to promote some of these technologies.
Yeah.
Often they launch these really neat technologies and then, you know, nobody pays them any attention.
App Store launch day, like when the iOS version launches, they typically have categories that highlights all the apps that best represent what the new features in iOS are. So like on the front page of the App Store, you'll have all the Clips apps and all the ARKit 4 apps and all the apps that use whatever other new technology, they want, like the best widgets probably.
Yeah.
All of that stuff.
Apple is adding, as Firefox has done, support for encrypted DNS, it's DOH and DOT. That's a good thing. A lot of people don't like it, especially internet service providers. It is not a VPN. In fact, you shouldn't use it and a VPN. Use one or the other. But it does at least keep your ISP from seeing what pages you're visiting. So that's a good thing. A new way to get an Apple Card if you've been turned down. My son, who's just getting started in his credit life, doesn't want to apply for an Apple Card because he's afraid of getting turned down. Well, Henry, now you could apply for it. And if you do get turned down, they have a 4-month plan, a path to Apple Card, telling you how you can get approved in as little as 4 months. It's an opt-in program, leverages information that Goldman Sachs used to determine credit worthiness, to outline why they were declined and have help them improve those specific financial markers so that in 4 months they can achieve the holy grail, an Apple Card. Apple wants
consume.
You must consume. It's good for everyone. Rumor.
Give up your personal dreams so you can make more money and buy more things. Ah. Yes, it is the way. It is the way.
Another rumor from Mr. Kuo or Mr. Ming Chi, I'm not sure. Ming Chi San. No, he's Chinese. Never mind. Ming Chi Xianchang.
Xianchang.
Who says that Apple will not put the charger or ear pods in the next iPhone. And I, for
because
one,
there's no ports, Leo. I mean, how could they have headphones?
Will it be the portless one? No, actually, I think this is a good idea. There's billions of tons of e-waste created every year by useless chargers. Certainly by now, you have a charger you could use with your iPhone. And if not, you can buy one from Apple.
Yeah, a new one. It looks like a 20 volt. The thing that's interesting to me is that people are like, well, Apple better cut the price of the iPhone by the same amount as the charger, believing that the retail price of, like, I think it's like $20 for the 5 watt and $40 for the 18 watt. And Apple pays dollars, like they very, very little for those things. And they're never going to sell a $697 iPhone. So the only logical thing, they're probably going to eat the cost of 5G. Like, a lot of vendors have raised prices by $100.
Oh, when you look so at this, what helps with
a
that.
Samsung phone cost this year compared to last year, they're just going to eat that cost, and then they'll hope that you don't notice the loss of a couple accessories along the way.
That's actually,
but you can order them if you want them.
That's what MG Siegler says. He says the number one reason is margins because of these expensive 5G components and the COVID hit to the supply chain. He also says it's good for the environment because it makes these boxes smaller. You can ship them easier. And he says it's the next iPhone that's not going to have ports, so you might as well get people used to it. I think that's fair. And then
it's all about getting people to expect a little less.
Yeah.
But wouldn't it be – now, this is something that occurred to me after I was working through my complicated feelings regarding this rumor. But wouldn't it be interesting if Apple – did the math and realized that here's the number of chargers we are not going to ship in this calendar year in this region, and simply said we're going to package in like just little like blister packs the same sort of like really cheap $2 chargers, and we're going to basically send them out to every Apple store. And if someone comes into an Apple store with an Apple iPhone that they've bought in recent history and said, hey, I need a charger, they just get it. They're just handed a charger immediately. So that to say that, look, if you really need a charger, if you don't already have one, or if you think that you can't afford $10 for a charger, but via Amazon, come into an Apple store, we'll give you a charger. We also will take note of when was the last time you asked for a free one, we gave one to you. But not only would that be saying that, that would negate the idea of, well, how come you're not giving me what you used to give me? But it would also say that, oh my God, I can't believe I lost my charger. Being able to walk into an Apple store and like be handed a charger, that would be like one of the most amazing goodwill things that they could do through the Apple store.
That's true.
Fine. You get a bumper.
Babies.
That's how they do it. I wonder... I mean, the reason that they ostensibly they kicked Hey out of the App Store is because when you download the app and open it up, it did nothing. And we don't want apps that do nothing. Well, what if you bought a phone and you didn't have a charger in it? It wouldn't – you'd be kind of stuck too, wouldn't you?
Especially in jurisdictions where you can't ship a phone with an electrical charge anymore.
Yeah. You'd be kind of like, well, that's nice. Here's a piece of glass.
It looks like the EU is going to mandate this anyway. And I know Apple has been pushing back really hard. The thing with the EU, though, is they're so nebulous. Like, when they said that you have to have standardized chargers, do they mean the plug? Do they mean the cable? Every news outlet covered it differently. Yeah. And it looks like they mean they're going to actually mandate no plugs in boxes. And Apple fought them on the cable, but it doesn't look like they're going to fight them on the plug, because a plug doesn't mean anything to Lightning. Like, it just doesn't care about Lightning, so why fight them on it? The whole thing is just...
I don't know what percentage of Apple iPhone buyers don't have a charger, but maybe...
And if you swap from Android, you probably have a USB-C charger, which the new USB-C cable
they'll
support.
Put the cable in the box, or no, I guess not. Will they?
Yeah, I believe the cable is supposed to be in the box.
Okay.
Yeah. I will say they're going to be really bummed out if the next iPhone ships without a charging port or a charging/data point port. I don't think it's nearly time for that yet.
No, probably a year or two away. And I 13. Wonder if the technology, like in the ARM Mac, sorry, I'm calling it ARM Macs already, huh? The Apple Silicon Mac, where it has that recovery partition, is going to be part of their answer to some of the problems with portless devices.
Sure. Yeah.
I'm sorry. I know that you're trying to wrap up.
I got lots of time.
But so long as my position has always been you can't, if you're going to take away something from me, make sure you're giving me something that is as compelling as the thing you're taking away. So if Apple were able to, if 2 years from now or 3 years from now, Apple is going to make the case that, well, and thanks to our best in class battery life, now you can get, now you get three days worth of battery life out of a single charge. So it's no long, unlike some of our brothers and sisters in the Android community, you are not going to run out of run out of charge and need to have a USB battery pack with you at all times. And by, and also we identified this as a point of compromise for people who, either government or individuals who are trying to get data off of your phone without your permission. And we've also introduced so many different technologies that allow you to recover this machine, recover your device without having to plug it into a device, that we've essentially, we feel as though we've addressed every need for an actual physical connector and gotten rid of it. I would fall in line pretty quickly if they just simply say we decided it was bumming us out that we had to cut a hole in our beautiful iPhone, so we didn't. Good luck with that. Then I'll say bye.
See ya.
Yeah. Or it could have, like, it could still have a smart connector and an adapter that lets you plug it in if you
that's,
really want
to. I like that. Actually, wired about it. I think that's a good idea. The smart connector on the back, that solves the whole
problem. Which is what they're doing with the iPad Pro and the keyboard now.
Right.
Yeah, I don't think that would work as well because. The life that I lead with iPhones and with Android phones right now does not involve, well, I own one charging stand or two charging stands. It's that I always have a position. If I'm two rooms away from the room where I have my one or two chargers in, that's a big problem for me. Whereas if I were in a position where at some point in life, at some point in every year, I misplaced my, that's my 3 foot charging cable. I need a 6 foot one, and I'll order a couple of more from Amazon, which means that there's one in my, every single laptop bag I have, there's one pretty much within reach everywhere. If it were sort of, if I'm one of the bummers of my Sony Walkman music player, as I said, when I made it a pick of the week, is that it uses this stupid, like, you know, original Sony Walkman style charge, non-standard charging port, which means that there are times where I don't use it because I need to, I know I'm going to be going for a walk later in the day, but I can't find my one copy of this charging cable, so it goes uncharged for a good amount of time. I fear that if Apple decided that Pogo pins is going to be the way to go, again, another set of incompatible cables I'm going to need. I don't think that's going to be as good as simply saying, just give us USB-C. Just give us USB-C. Yeah. What's wrong with the USB-C?
Especially on the Pro iPhones.
Yeah.
I take it back. We are in a hurry to get rid of the show for two important reasons. One, the first launch for Space Force is mere minutes away. Ooh. It's a GPS satellite. But it is the first launch for Space Force.
G.I. Joe.
And I've got a brisket on my Traeger that I think I have.
There we go.
That's the real reason.
Brisket is always an acceptable excuse for ending any meeting early.
I've got my to
brisket. Boom.
Wrap it in foil.
Sorry, gentlemen. I need this vehicle. It's a brisket emergency.
Last story. Apple News is losing the New York Times. I don't know if this will be the first of many defections. We've talked before about how publishers are not thrilled about the fact they don't get any customer information from Apple, that it doesn't drive a lot of traffic. Very few organizations are as big and as rich and as powerful as the New York Times. But starting yesterday, Times articles no longer appearing on the Apple News feed. So we'll see if this, what this means for Apple.
It's still
News.
Only in like four countries. I mean, it's so the opposite of every one of Apple's other services.
Yeah, I keep checking, and I get too much useless material in it. It's just not a good feed for me, and I can't bookmark and send it out anyway because it just sends out a bookmark to Apple News, which is useless.
I think they're fixing that too, and I think they're also adding a way, which I wanted, where if you click on a link to a web, to an article that you don't subscribe on the web, but you do have it through Apple News, it'll send you to Apple News, which has always been my frustration with like Wall Street Journal and New York Times.
Yeah, I don't pay for some of these, and so I can't see them.
Yeah.
Okay, if you know, and by the way, we barely touched on iOS 14, but there's some nice, really nice features coming. Including the ability to set a different default browser and email program, which I think is...
We need a bigger show, Leo.
Yeah, we need a bigger show. But
the great thing is that week by week, we are weekly less dumb about what we knew a week before.
That's true.
Oh, and for people who are, because a lot of people are complaining they don't see that in the beta, developers have to flag an app saying it's a candidate for browser and for email, and Apple has to approve it because they don't want some company to make a scam browser that just redirects you to their Amazon affiliate links or just shows you a bunch of tracker ads. So, like, if Chrome says we're a browser, Apple's like, yes, you are. But if, like, Vita browser X3Z or something comes up and says please, they're like, no, sorry.
Do you want to
make Chrome OS apps
now? Do you want to watch the rocket go up? Is it almost time, John? Or is it five more minutes? Okay. Space Force.
Ooh, that could be our like $300 million outro if we time it perfectly.
If we time it right. Andy Yanako, your pick of the week.
Unfortunately, Carl Reiner passed away today at 98.
No.
Not unexpected, but still very, very sad. Where do you start? Where do you begin to talk about how wonderful he was? I'm just going to use my pick of the week to recommend it. I was an avid collector of his memoirs. He started writing his memoirs in his 80s, and his audiobooks of these memoirs are amazing because he did start off life as a performer, quickly became a writer-performer, but you can see how often and over the previous like decades he had told each of these stories and how he had honed each of these stories about his life and his making his way through it into the Itamarian story. He has honed each story to razor precision, not an ounce of fat on it. When I look at my greatest hits in my Audible library, starting with my anecdotal life, these are often just Carl Reiner stories. So it's,
we were again, lucky to have him as long as we did. I mean, he was even doing a quarantine podcast, Dispatches from Quarantine, and 98 years old.
And he had a great Twitter account, and he just never, ever stopped. That is so aspirational to be fortunate enough to have your health and your wits about you in your 90s, but also to not have lost your passion and the joy you take in the career that you so luckily found for yourself when you're 18, 19, 20 years old. That is such a blessing.
Well, at least the 2,000-year-old man is still alive. So we will. I will go home tonight and watch All of Me. So
yes.
Yeah. All right. That's a sad way to go. But yes, I'm glad you mentioned it. I hadn't heard. I'm big fan. Of course, his son, Rob Reiner, also a very successful director and actor and comedian. Carl Reiner at the age of 98.
Mel Brooks, about 5 years behind him. And still just as sharp.
Still just as sharp, yeah. Renee, your pick of the week.
So, I mean, going after Andy Yanako in the best of times is really difficult. But to go with something so self-serving as I am doing after he has been so selfish.
Oh, go ahead. It's on the Renee Ritchie channel.
So I got a chance to sit down and talk to two people from Apple, Cecilia, who is part of iOS product marketing, and Katie, who was actually at the keynote. She was the one doing the privacy demonstration, and she manages user privacy at Apple. And we spoke for about half an hour on the iOS user interface changes and things like messages and maps. And then we spoke for about another 15 minutes about privacy and how Apple views privacy and sort of the way in which they're continuously driving this giant privacy machine that they're containing. And it was absolutely a delightful, great way for me to end WWDC, just some casual chat about the stuff that I was on this complete espresso in WWDC high, so I'm really not even sure what I said during this whole thing. But they were eloquent, informative, and just super,
looks like
super gracious.
She got Craig Federighi's seat on the ring. Because I see the rainbow outside her window.
Yeah,
that's cool. Yeah, that's really cool. Katie,
smart people.
Yeah, really nice. That's on the Renee Ritchie channel, which one must watch at youtube.com/Renee Ritchie. Andy Yanako, of course, you're going to be on WGBH Boston. When?
Tomorrow, Wednesday, because of the July 4th holiday, I'm moved up. So I'm going to be on 1 p.m. on Wednesday. As usual, tune into WGBHnews.org to stream it live or later when it gets posted.
Very good. And, of course, Mac Break Weekly appears every Tuesday around 11 a.m. Pacific, 2 p.m. Eastern Time, 1800 UTC. If you want to tune in and watch, we have a live audio and video stream at twit.tv/live. You can also get on-demand versions of the show at our website, twit.tv/mbw. Of course, our favored way, the best way you could possibly get it, would be to subscribe in your favorite podcast application. Because, after all, who wants to get up of a Tuesday and not have Mac Break Weekly waiting for them to listen to? Next week, I don't know who's going to be on. We'll get Lori back. let's just have all the three of you and see if Alex can make it. I don't know. We'll just wait.
Once again, you just got to see. I wonder what high profile person is streaming live this afternoon. Always my first thought when Alex.
Yeah, no,
here.
I know, I know. It's great, and he only told us yesterday, so it must have been something important and urgent. I'll have to think about that. Ladies and gentlemen, I am sad to say it's time to go back to work because break time is over. Meanwhile, let's exit with my pick of the week: a giant rocket ship. On its way,
10, 9, 8,
into the
7,
sky,
6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, 0. Ignition, liftoff.
This is a GPS
go
satellite.
Go Falcon, go GPS.
SpaceX launch, is it? Third generation, whatever that means. Means they'll know exactly where you are at all times. And it's part of our Space Force, the first Space Force launch. There it goes.
It's too bad there's no bass in that audio. It sounds like a baking soda and vinegar rocket.
If you were there, you would be able to feel the bass.
You no longer have eardrums.
Even if you couldn't hear it, you'd be able to feel it. Yeah.
The first Diet Coke and Mentos rocket to breach low Earth orbit.
I need something more than the speedtest.net graphics, too. Come on, this is Space Force.
Yeah, now National Geographic's going to take us down again because they own space. Thank you, Renee Ritchie. Thank you, Andy Anacco. Thank you, everybody, for joining us. We'll see you next time. Bye-bye.
Hey, folks, I'm Micah Sargent, host of Hands on iOS right here on the TWiT Network. If you've got iOS devices or watchOS devices or tvOS device, any kind of Apple mobile device, you are going to want to check out Hands on iOS. It is the best way to make the most of those devices. I walk through tips, tricks, and everything in between, plus answer your questions. So be sure to check it out. It's twit.tv/HOI.